This is Inside the Net with Amber MacArthur, episode 16 for March 28th, 2006. Podzinger. Good morning, Amber MacArthur.
Good morning, Leo.
We're actually doing this a little ahead of time because I'm flying up to Canada to do Call for Help. So we thought we'd get one done quickly. Who do we have for our Inside the Net show today?
Today we're going to talk to Alex Latz from Podzinger, which is a service that launched just a little while ago where you can search audio and video podcasts.
You've been getting me all excited about this. I think you like it because it's video too, right?
Well, I think that's the interesting thing. I know we've talked before about Podscope, which was a site that came out a couple of months ago where you could just search audio. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to finally see someone recognizing that there's a lot of video online and there's no way to necessarily really find it. So Podzinger has launched with this video capability. So you can go and you can enter a keyword and you can search both video and audio at the same time.
I like that. And how do they do? Well, maybe I guess we should ask Alex. They do a pretty good job. I guess I should ask you because you probably already searched for all of your podcasts. Yeah.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job. One thing I've noticed because it's relatively new is, for instance, with the last couple episodes of the video podcast I do, Command N, they're only picking up the more recent episodes. So I don't know if they just started, caching them as of the past week or month. We're going to have to talk to Alex and get all the details on that.
The company behind it, BBN, is actually one of the companies that invented the internet. So it's a pretty good lineage. In fact, I thought we'd start off by asking Alex about BBN.
BBN is fundamentally a contract research and development firm that has been doing, the kind of projects that no one else can do for 50 years and more. So BBN started in 1948, and yes, indeed was, set up the first internet nodes as part of the original ARPANET contract. Sent the first networked email. Ray Tomlinson, who invented the @, sits one floor below me.
Wow.
I speak to you. So that's pretty cool. He's a grandfather now, very nice gentleman who kind of likes to do Java programming and walk around Fresh Pond with his granddaughter.
Wow.
BBN also obviously really got into the business in the 80s of hosting and managing large networks as an ISP, which resulted in what eventually became Genuity. BBN... As of 2000, BBN was responsible for spawning what was the largest initial public offering of all time when Genuity went public in 2000.
Really?
So
wow.
BBN has in fact been a legend. And in the area that Podzinger is focused on, we are relying on 30 years of experience in the area of speech recognition and natural language, and that's kind of the lineage and family tree that we bring to the table with Podzinger.
Can you describe in your terms, why Podzinger came about, why you guys decided to get involved in something like this to search audio and now video podcasts?
Sure. Part of it comes from the fact that this is far from a new problem. In the mid-90s, BBN was already being tasked with the effort to try to be able to make structure out of the ultimate unstructured data, which is audio and video, because it's the words in audio and video are dark space, and we gotta in order to make sense of this, you gotta be able to search on that dark space. So BBN was asked by the government customer, mostly DARPA, to focus on this problem. By 1998 and 2000, we were already demonstrating some early systems, but by 2002. DARPA still felt that this problem was only getting much, much worse. DARPA, looking at not only the Defense Department analysts, but also analysts at three-letter agencies, and they said, this problem is getting worse, and we need to be able to do search on audio and video in the same way that we do search on text. That's what analysts need. So from 2002 to 2005, BBN was a leading recipient of research dollars under a program called EARS, I hate the acronym, but it's not ours, it's the customers, so we'll live with it. Effective, affordable, reusable speech to text. And that really moved the state of the art to the point where you could do Podzinger. So that just kind of, you know, like all technology, you can, but that doesn't make it interesting.
Right. Just before you go on, I think it's kind of interesting. This comes out of basically spy technology.
Yeah, I mean, basically that's the case.
How is this kind of recognition different from the continuous speech recognition that programs like, you know, ViaVoice or Dragon Naturally Speaking do?
You know, continuous speech recognition is kind of a broad family of speech recognition that relies on teaching computers how to do speech recognition based on training those computers on massive amounts of data. And the difference, there's two major areas of difference from those things that are kind of commercially available. And those two differences are largely a result of the fact that those, you know, the IBM product that's out there, the Dragon products that are out there, that technology is, you know, circa 98, 2000, you know, technology without a lot of push forward in it. The we've made the push over the last 5-6 years in two directions. One is just algorithmic, and I'm not smart enough to get into all the details of the algorithms, but the other is, you know, training on a massive base of content. And moving the word error rate across all of that audio up to the threshold where it's good enough that the word error rates produce search results, you know, on the order of, you know, with accuracies that are very, very high. So, you know, it really is a function of the fact that the algorithm work and the training on data has moved forward very, very significantly over the last 5 years, and that's what differentiates BBN's core technology from all the other folks out there.
I just want to point out Alex is being a little self-deprecating. He has a physics and math degree from MIT, a JD from Harvard, and was a technology licensing officer at MIT. So you know a little bit about technology.
Yeah. No, I'm dangerously, my dad tells me that my dad was an engineer for 35, 40 years in the electrical engineer, and he says I ruined myself by going to Harvard Law School. And sometimes I think he's right.
It's frustrating, though, for those of us who use the commercial products, and I'm not surprised to hear you say they haven't advanced since 98. It's oddly enough, they're just kind of moribund. To hear that there is this kind of advance going on, but we're not seeing it in commercial speech recognition. I mean, everybody wanted good commercial speech recognition.
Well, I think it's a function of the fact that what people have called audio mining, people have called audio mining for 5-6 years. So the second part of the equation really here is kind of the part that I'm really in, you know, my responsibility lies, which is as the markets emerge. I mean, what has happened in the last, you know, 2 years that suddenly make something like Podzinger something that we look at and we say, well, why didn't we have this before? I mean, this is of course something that we need because we need to be able to search in this what used to be a dark space. And the reason, and somebody asked me a good question, which was, is it because of the content or is it because of something else? And I said, well, you know, the content has been online, not in the volume that it is now. But the content has been online for some time. People have been putting audio and video up online. You can go to some of the radio stations and they post much of their content. But the difference is now we have two things have happened that enable the channel to the consumer so the consumer can really start to consume this. One is one that we talk about all the time. It's bandwidth. We now have, you know, large bandwidth to the consumer so the consumer can have a very enjoyable experience listening to a podcast or watching a video podcast or looking at any kind of audio or video on their desktop or laptop. The other one is the iPod and iTunes and what RSS represents. Because RSS now represents a delivery mechanism that is so easy for the consumer. If I want to be able to subscribe to your podcast, you know, I hit subscribe on iTunes and then I connect my iPod to my computer and boom, I've got all the most recent episodes. You know, how simple is that? That was something that that level of simplicity is essential towards reaching a broader set of consumers, and that simplicity hasn't existed before. So it's not just the content, it's also this beautiful channel to the consumer which is emerging in spades, and our premise is simply that the missing piece in between is allowing that consumer to find that content by allowing search within the audio.
Alex, just curiously, how do you guys define between a video podcast and simple audio or video on the internet as well as audio podcast and simple audio on the internet? Because, you know, there are things out there like Google Video where you can search videos. Is there something in Podzinger that really separates that?
Sure. The Podzinger consumer site is focused is focused solely on content which is available using RSS. So something that is a podcast is or a vodcast is something that is available via the RSS mechanism. And really, like I said before, that's a delivery mechanism. There is nothing that separate that doesn't. Our technology is equally applicable to all technologies, to all content, audio or video, which is available not as podcast. I didn't say that very well, but you know what I mean. So we are actively, in addition to the consumer-facing site, we are actively selling what we call white label, powered by Podzinger search services, to entities that are search entities that want to have speech this kind of capability for search, but also to content owners. So, a CNN who has video on demand, which is freely available. They have Pipeline for video, which is a subscription-based video. That's not in podcast format, but we're working with folks like CNN in order to enable search from their sites of their audio and video content.
This is very similar to what your chief competitor has been doing for years, TV Eyes, which offers a clipping service. And, of course, they turned their video and audio clipping service into PodScope, which is predates Podzinger by a little bit. You want to compare yourself at all to PodScope?
Well, without kind of talking about other companies, I don't have the insight into them. I will compare to the technologies that differ. I mean, the technology that PodScope uses is primarily a phonetic-based technology, which is a technology that allows for recognition of sounds. And there's a big difference between recognizing sounds and recognizing words. When you recognize sounds, that means that those sounds in the exact order have to be the sounds that you search for in your search field in order to recognize them. So when doing a search, when we search in a manner which is kind of not consistent with the way the words might be said in might be said in regular speech. So, for example, if I were looking for Howard Stern when he appeared on 60 Minutes, I might type in Howard Stern 60 Minutes,
right,
and that exact ordering of sounds would never appear in a phonetic-based recognizer. So that's one of the big issues. The other issue is simply a user interface issue. The thing that we think is really truly the differentiator is the ability to actually do a full text search, so search on a text index, and then actually get a text-based result. Because our brains are really good at rapidly skimming text-based results to assess relevance. And one of the big problems with audio and video is not just finding the words, but making it so that the results are usable to the consumer who does the search. And so if we have to listen to all of these results, even if we have to listen to snippets, then that's not as good of a user interface. So, these are the things that make the biggest distinction. I actually see oftentimes people talk about our competitors being Google Video, Yahoo Podcast or Yahoo Video, or AOL Singing Fish and TV and Truvio, and we like to say, look, those aren't competitors; those are customers, or at least potential customers, because they're doing text-based search on the limited amount of text that you get into the titles or the show notes that come with video snippets. And we provide complete full-text search. So our objective is to basically enable those competitors to do full-text search as well.
So is your process that you take each podcast or video podcast and do speech-to-text recognition on the entire thing and essentially make a transcript and then add it to a search index?
Yeah, you nailed it. The only thing that I would kind of refine in that is we try to be very clear with people that we don't make a transcript. Speech-to-text technology is not going to be something that enables someone to kind of replace closed captioning anytime soon. It's also not going to be, a replacement for, a legal transcriber who needs to get accuracies near 100%. But what we refer to it as, yes, in fact, we process every one and create this text index. And that text index, each word is tagged. So, if right now we're almost at 100,000 podcasts in our text index for Podzinger, and our total number of words in our text index is on the order of 300 million words, and each of those words is tagged, and it's tagged in several ways. One, the first tag is, what's the word? And so we tag that word. And then the second thing is, how confident are we in the word? So we know a confidence score, and sometimes on Podzinger you'll do a search and you'll get a bunch of, you know, double hyphens, and that means that we weren't confident enough on that word to expose it to you. Mm. And that's a user interface decision on our part, because we simply don't want to kind of provide words that are not the not, you know, that we're not confident about, because if you're going to skim something, we don't want you to skim something that we're pretty sure is wrong.
I'm impressed, though. So, I mean, I'm looking at for one thing, you do these things fast. You've got This Week in Tech a day after, which that's an hour worth of scanning in one day, and the transcript is pretty good. The text is actually pretty accurate, as probably as good as any closed captioning I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever work on a treadmill and you watch the closed captioning in front of you on the screens,
it's
on the wall.
Oh, it's terrible.
Some of it is actually pretty
it's
hilarious,
humorous,
and the characters and the blocks and the characters. So yes, I mean, there's no, you know, I'm being a little self-deprecating, because I want to try to, you know, basically, you know, be realistic. I mean, this technology is great for search. It's terrific for search. It exposes these words in ways they never could have been exposed before, and it provides text that a user can easily consume in a rapid way. So there's no doubt, but there's a big difference between a search application and a true transcription application. And so I'm just trying to, you know, say it like it is. It's great for search, and that's why sometimes I say to people, I say, look, this is not about speech recognition. This is about search accuracy. You know, so if we can provide you with a good search result, then you'll come back to Podzinger. The fact that we might get a word wrong here or there, you know, that's almost irrelevant. And part of it too, just to get a little more technical on it, is that the words that tend to be wrong are the kind of the small words, the connector words, the of, and. And so the words that really stand out and that are easier to recognize tend to be the words that are more meaningful for search. So if I'm searching on Constantinople, that's a word that is going to stand out in the midst of all the of, us, and ands. So that's another reason why, you know, it's not about speech accuracy, but it really is all about search accuracy.
I was curious, because you just launched the video search for Podzinger. What were some of the challenges in terms of, you know, doing search for video? Because it has to be somewhat different, I would think. And also, I'm wondering about the challenges when people want to subscribe or download those videos via Podzinger, because I know you have to go through sort of a second screen where you choose which player you're using. And, you know, how long did it take you guys to figure that out?
Well, I think as your question kind of alludes to, I mean, that a lot of the choices with video are, and the challenges are associated with the user interface, not necessarily with the core technology. So we made some decisions that we hope will make use of Podzinger for video search and video playback, you know, enjoyable. So one of the things that we needed to do is we decided to have a video player for each podcast. And the reason we did that is because we found from people that come to Podzinger just for audio podcasts that one of the things that people really like to do with it is they like to use it and as their place to go to listen. And, you know, so you show up at Podzinger and kind of you check in on your topics that you care about, and you might even have saved some of those searches in Podzinger as RSS alerts so that you just check your most recent podcasts. People like to listen. So we said, you know, people are going to like to watch too. So let's provide a video UI for each video search result. So when you do a search just in video and you do it on whatever topic, you get, you know, each result has its own player, and that allows people to actually even open up that player. If you click on one of our players, and it'll pop up as a separate screen. So you can use Podzinger to find a bunch of video and then pop that up as separate screens, and then just have your desktop populated with videos that you want to watch. So that video, that decision was a big decision. Technically, from a core technology perspective, it's really not that different. We had to add a step because we do the information that we use to search in video is the words. So we did add a step at the front of the process where we separate the audio streams from the video streams, and we then process the audio into the text index. We rely on the fact that we have a timestamp for every single word to connect people back to the exact location in that video.
That's what I really like. It plays from that point.
Right, and that's something that differentiates us. You know, it differentiates us in audio. It differentiates us in video, and It's just some people just say, wow, this access, I haven't never had this kind of access before. And so we're learning that that is a, that's something that people really want. They want to, they want the access into the location in the content where the material they care about resides. And then if they really like something, so let's find, let's say they decide that, you know, This Week in Tech or, you know, Inside the Net, you know, whichever podcast I decide that I've, you know, I regularly find because it talks about topics that are of interest to me. Then the other thing that we always, you know, we've really tried to strive for here is make it possible, really easy. You know, how do I get this? Well, you can download it directly from the owner's site. You can go to iTunes and subscribe to it with a single push of the button. You can go to Yahoo, subscribe to it. So those kind of things are very consistent, you know, from audio to video. The other thing that video obviously adds, you know, I think your part of your question also got to this, Amber, is that over time, as more and more content moves to the video podcast format, the sheer volume of this will become more and more of an issue. And yet, what we're finding is that that there already is an infrastructure, you know, of companies like Akamai and Mirror Image out there that can support large volumes of audio and video specifically as that really emerges. I mean, I don't know what numbers you guys keep in your head, but the, you know, if the total world of podcast episodes today in English is on the order of 300,000, you know, only 10 to 20,000 of those are video. And yet the percent, at least, you know, this is not an exact, you know, study, but, you know, the evidence suggests that the amount that are now moving to video is significant, and that the video growth will be very high.
I have to say you're very sensitive. I have to say you've been very sensitive to the podcast culture, but also the RSS culture. I mean, you've got RSS for every search, so you could actually subscribe to a search. You've got RSS for each individual program. I mean, you've done a nice job of being responsive to, obviously, what is kind of the key element of podcasting, which is RSS.
Yeah, and that's something that we think might. So let's dream for a minute, right? We talked before about some content not being in RSS format, and that we were working with people on a private label basis to enable search of that. But why, given how easy this is for the consumer, given the channel to the consumer, given the connectivity that RSS with things like Podzinger alerts allows so that people can post live RSS alerts on their pages, why wouldn't more people just say, gosh, the way to go here is to move our content to the RSS format? So on my optimistic moments, I really feel like most people will have actually move. There'll be more of a move of kind of existing content and existing archives of content to the RSS format than we might expect, which would really, you know, change everything in terms of the quality and range of content that you'd find.
Well, you enable that in a way, because I can create a RSS feed out of a search and then subscribe to that feed. And,
right.
And then now I've created, in effect, a new feed out of a search term, which
is
fantastic.
We've actually seen real steady, nice growth and volume out of that. The blogging community, who knows how to kind of deal with RSS, immediately knows how to do what you just described. So they say, okay, I blog about, oh man, whatever my topic. I'm a sports fan, so I'll pick. I blog about the Red Sox, okay. And now I've added an audio or a video podcast about the Red Sox. But I also want to kind of post on my blog a live RSS alert that kind of always tracks my topic, the Red Sox, regardless of whether it's from my podcasts or from other people's podcasts. And then what's interesting about that is that that then lives as a live search, which also can be crawled by the text crawlers so that it brings more people to you.
Interesting.
So you can blog about, you can save these searches on anything. And the thing that makes it you is that you had the thought to create the search. You know, and then if someone gets inside of your search, then and they find a particular, they find one of your podcasts, for example. Well, then they go to your podcast. So you've proliferated. You know, so it is traditional people who are uncomfortable with the connectivity that this represents, you know, may have like a moment of pause. But the power here is enormous.
Well, it's impressive. And, I mean, I just did it. For instance, I created a search for my name because I'm vain. And then I took the RSS feed from that search and I put it into NetNewsWire, my RSS aggregator. And there it is. Yep. I have entries from Podzinger for each of these, and I can listen to that file or download it. That's pretty
amazing.
You can
listen to your voice all night long.
Yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't do that. Even more, you can listen to when people are talking about you and in ways that you never otherwise would have known. And we actually encourage some of this. We've created a thing called the Zing Index, where we are just now starting to, you know, try to expose some of the things that people talk about and people like. So we not only do things like keep track of the most listened to podcasts, and by the way, you're right up there at the top.
Leo, you're at the top of the Zing Index, by the way.
You are.
Well,
yes.
There you go.
So it's funny because
you don't actually index the Twit feed. You index Radio Leo, which is a combo feed of all of them. So I guess there is quite a bit of human intelligence going on. You must have quite a few editors who are looking at the feeds.
The richness of what we can do is significant. What we are doing now, I think, is just the tip of the iceberg, and we also are keeping track of who's being talked about. So
I see Barry Bonds is number one.
There is Barry Bonds, and now with Barry Bonds, it's kind of no surprise. But right. I click on that search. That's a live search. So the things that were talked about yesterday are on there. The things that tomorrow it'll be different if more stuff comes out. And people move up and down this thing, and you can go in here and say, well, why the heck did, Bill Clinton suddenly appear, near the top of my list? And you go in and you listen, and you find, what's happening.
This reminds me a lot of Blogdex and Daypop, which I subscribe to, which are kind of blog aggregators, what's hot, or, Mimirandum, what's going on.
And Technorati as well.
Same thing, yeah. Mm-hmm. But you're doing it for audio and video, which I think makes it really interesting.
Yeah, and... we're doing it for audio and I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head kind of through all of these questions, which is we're doing it for audio and video, but we're doing it in a way for the user, for the podcaster, for the blogger, we're doing it in a way which is consistent with the way the text is managed. And the key to that brings us back to the technology, because if you can't put the words into text and expose that text with confidence, then you can't make any of this happen. So it's just a very exciting time now because the market is emerging and the technology is there, and it might just be the right time for both.
What's really interesting to me as well is that, I sometimes go to iTunes and I go into the podcast directory and I want to search through some podcasts, but I find it's not that easy to find what I want. And really the index of what's on iTunes in the directory, especially the top 100, it doesn't seem to fluctuate or change that much. So I'm not really able to, get deep into the podcast world, which I know, as you mentioned, there's tens of thousands of podcasts. So it's nice to be able to come to one place where I can search both audio and video podcasts at the same time, because I have not seen that technology yet. And as we know, I watch video podcasts, but I also listen to audio podcasts. So it's not as though, people just do one of those things.
Right. Right. And we do see the opportunity, again, on the private label basis, to not only continue to push the envelope with Podzinger, but also to do these private label type of deals with people like iTunes, so that, if someone, is an iTunes user, they'll also be able to do that search from iTunes and get text-based results that they can quickly skim, and so they can find stuff that they otherwise wouldn't find. And sometimes people say, well, wait a minute, you would be enabling iTunes to compete with Podzinger. And the answer is yes. This is another thing we've learned in the world of search. I mean, Google is very powerful, not only because of their great consumer site, but also because they provide, powered by Google capability, to, others that, in essence, compete. The reason why this is all doable is because the dollars that are at stake here really fundamentally end up being advertising dollars. And so the ability to aggregate all of this activity with one search capability, whether it's on the Podzinger site or it's on a Powered by Podzinger basis for others, enables the ability to really aggregate some selling power that we otherwise wouldn't have. So, our vision here is that, and we're not there yet because the traffic is just starting to really build, but our vision here is that this search capability, just as it was with text, is the thing that's going to be able to make help people make money. So if we can aggregate selling power on advertising through Podzinger, then as people register with, then it will become more of a motivation for people to register with Podzinger into a revenue share arrangement where we will, you know, aggregate selling power of advertising and make it happen and then share that with the podcaster. Of course, for those that don't want to do advertising and want to do subscription-based, you still have the same problem. You still have to find it. So, you know, there was news today about, I'm blanking on the name, the first subscription-based podcast on iTunes. And you know, whether it's subscription-based or not, you still got to find it.
You're talking about the Ricky Gervais's podcast.
Yeah. Ricky Gervais is actually near the top of our list. And then, you know, hey, Ricky's decided to go subscription-based, so we have to go do a private label deal with him now.
Oh, interesting. So as soon as he's subscription-based, he's off the public Zing index.
Podzinger is all about what's out there for free, and so the model on Podzinger is an advertising model, and so if you decide to go subscription-based, then we can still work with you, and we would provide that on a private label basis, but it just, you know, that just takes more talk and more work. I mean, one of the things that we do for people now, which I don't know if you're taking advantage of, but is when people register, if they give us their email, we send them a response and say, hey, look, you know, feel free to put the Podzinger search box on your site so that you can search your podcast or search all of Podzinger's podcasts from your site.
I just signed up.
Oh, cool. So
Leo's so fast on this stuff.
So we have 65, I think we're up to, you know, it grows by, you know, I don't know, it's growing every week, but, you know, we're somewhere between 65 and 70 different podcasters now who have our search field. The Smithsonian TV just went live with the Podzinger search box. And this is kind of like part of the free deal. I mean, we put your podcast into our text index. We do that for free, and we want to make sure that you have the benefit of doing these RSS alerts, of being able to put our search box on your site and doing all those, and that's also, you know, for free. And part of this is because we want everybody to benefit here from kind of the acceleration of content. We want to benefit from having more and more access to that content, because as that access, as the traffic happens, then the those advertising dollars are out of necessity going to have to move to this medium, because they need to be able to have effective reach.
Let me ask you a purely legalistic question here, and I hate to even ask these kinds of questions, but we are in this day and age where you get sued for everything. I notice in your agreement that you, when I agree to submit my podcast, that I agree to allow you to cache it and to chop it up for the search purposes. Now, of course, once I've explicitly agreed to that, then I've agreed to it. But you're doing it without agreements for many podcasts. Is there any issue there legally?
Well, there's always the issue of copyright and ownership. We have actually a copyright policy which says that we participate in the DMCA. Which says that if anyone was taking copywritten content and putting on Podzinger in a way that the original owner didn't want, then we would immediately cease and desist. In terms of you know, caching content, you know, that's still somewhat of a field which is, you know, still being established. But much of what we're in no sense trying to do, we're not trying to host content. You know, we're trying, when anyone wants to download, we direct them back to the original site. When anybody wants to subscribe, they subscribe through an RSS feed that they've established with, you know, iTunes or Yahoo. And so, but we are trying to have, there's a balance here, because we're trying to have a very good user experience for the customer. So particularly with video, you know, caching is something which is absolutely necessary in order to make sure that the consumer experience is terrific. And, you know, the bulk of the, you know, the legal precedents out there say that caching is an appropriate use and not a violation of originating owner copyright.
I mean, it's really the same battle you'd fight as a Google if you have a cached page, but it's a little different, I imagine, because it's audio and video.
Yeah, so I think that there's certainly it's certainly a field which is, you know, to be established. I mean, the real issue here is that, you know, we are number one in all cases, recognizing and supporting the copyright ownership of the creator of content. We in fact are trying to make it possible for people to have access to that content in ways that otherwise wouldn't be available. So, you know, our fundamental objective is to get people to get to content which people are otherwise trying to make available. And so, you know,
I'm not complaining.
You know, this is great.
Thus far, this is something which, you know, people have really said, look, this is great. And if someone ever came to us and said, look, I don't want my content available on Podzinger, we're part of the DMCA. We absolutely honor that. Respect anybody's decisions to do that. And we would, in fact, say, okay, if that's what you prefer, would you like to have a private label version of Podzinger supporting search from your site? If you want to have that, then that costs money, and we'd work out a business arrangement to do that. So, you know, it's going to be, of course, there's going to be some interesting changes. I mean, Google is one that's out there dealing with issues of caching on a regular basis. And you know, there's been some case law that is going mostly in their favor. In fact, all that I've seen lately is in their favor, which basically says to enable search, caching is something which improves the quality of the performance of it and is something that we want to see happen.
Alex, I just have one more question, because I think you've given us an excellent review of Podzinger and all it can do, and I'm sure people listening to this are going to want to play around with it right away. I especially want to add that search box on my site. I'm curious what other projects you're working on, or is Podzinger a full-time job for you, just because you have a pretty impressive resume?
Oh, well, now I'm blushing. Thanks for saying so. So, you know, my brain stops working when I start to blush. My job at BBN is a very exciting job. BBN has such a huge history and such a wide range of exciting technologies. My job is to bring these technologies to new markets as these markets emerge. The area of audio and video search is an enormous area, and whether it's, you know, the consumer facing Podzinger site or business relationships with owners of content or search sites, we are so busy pursuing this that it is to a large degree a full-time job. But I think over the long haul, I think that this is what we've done with Podzinger is something that we can replicate with other technologies. I mean, you know, we're doing this call over Skype. I mean, one of my first business that I started in 1996 was a company called NBX, which was one of the first IPPBXs, which we did ultimately sell to 3Com, and that has resulted in kind of a transition of the IP the PBX world to being based on IP. So, yeah, I do have a background in a number of different technology areas. My real expertise is in bringing technologies to markets from scratch. And you know, frankly, Podzinger and audio and video search is one of the most exciting things I've ever worked on. And I look forward to continuing to move it forward aggressively as part of BBN.
Well, keep us updated on all you're doing, because we'd love to check in with you again.
Oh, absolutely. Hey, you guys are the number one listened to podcast on Podzinger.
Temporarily, anyway.
You're top of the list.
Keep us up there, Alex.
No, this podcast will help us for a couple more weeks. But, you know, we've already seen on iTunes is the tech podcasts, because we have a lot of early adopters, do well initially. But then as people discover podcasting, they start subscribing to all the other interesting stuff out there, and tech podcasts fall down pretty quickly. So,
well, especially when NBC and ABC are able to put a lot of money behind some of their podcasts. So, you know, you get pushed aside, but it's all good.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, I think that this is all about, you know, we actually put this into our press release on video. This is all about connecting people with their passions.
That's right.
And it's all, and there will always be people that are passionate in the about technology. Just like there will always be people that are passionate about fashion, and this medium is something that I think will allow that connection between people like you guys who are creating the content and the people who want to consume it, and that connection is going to persist.
Well, so. And that's exactly you're enabling technology for a very important enabling technology for this medium. So, thank you for doing it.
Thanks so much, Alex.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to speak with you guys.
Don't be silly.
Alex Lotz is the president of Podzinger, and he's been with BBN for quite some time now. Interesting guy.
Yeah, BBN's an interesting company too, as you could tell. I mean, it's weird because they invented the internet, okay, but then they were also our web host for Tech TV. So it's just,
oh wow,
yeah, it's just kind of a weird, you know, you see BBN everywhere in the technology space, and here they are yet another place. I hated to ask that legalistic question, but you know how it is these days. People are so funny about caching and rights, and I think it's silly because this is the kind of service that can put your podcast on the map, can really help people find you.
It really, I mean, it's a win-win for anyone, because yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of people who might not be familiar with podcasts and who go to Podzinger and then they just get addicted to it because they start searching. They can get everything they want there for both audio and video podcasts. So it's an interesting service. I haven't seen anything comparable.
Well, Podscope is pretty similar, although I think I'm now a fan of Podzinger.
Yeah, it is similar. I mean, it's unfortunate that some of these services that come out a few months later, something even better comes out, and it keeps happening. It's like Leapfrog. It's like the web app Leapfrog, kind of.
Hey, that's, I just had an idea for a new service. Leapfrog. We're always one step ahead.
Leo.
Now we just have to think of what we do.
Don't include this, Leo. I think we're on to something.
I'm going to edit this out. Whatever is big, we're already doing the next thing. How about that?
That could be the new Inside the Net icon. It could be a little Leapfrog. It could be me jumping over you and you jumping
leapfrog
over.
Leapfrog services. So it does solve a big problem that podcasters really face and listeners face, is how do I find a podcast about something I'm interested in? And you just go to Podzinger and you type, you know, Pearl and, you know, CPAN and search for it. And you'll find all these podcasts that mention these two things. And well, one anyway. And then can subscribe to it right from that interface. So I think that's very smart.
It's very cool. And just for anyone who didn't catch it, I don't know if we mentioned the URL, but it's podzinger.com.
P-O-D-Z-I-N. I'm sorry, P-O-D-Z in, for you, Amber, I-N-G-E-R .com. Yeah, very cool. Well, that's a fun one. Thank you, Amber.
Yeah, it was really good. I'm glad we had a chance to do that. And next week, hopefully, we're going to catch some people at the iSummit conference, which is happening in Toronto. And we'll hopefully get a chance to interview some people there, Leo.
Amber and I will practice ambush journalism. Only we call it ambush journalism. And we're going to be doing that next week.
The leapfrog.
Leapfrogging over our people we don't want to talk to the people we want to talk to, surprising them. Or something like that. Hey, thanks for joining us this week. Well, don't forget, Amber does a great video podcast. He called it a vodcast. How do you like that word?
I used to think it might be called a vidcast or a vodcast, but I really think that Apple's kind of, decided that it's video podcast, and I'm just going to stick with that.
Whatever Apple decides, they're the 800-pound gorilla in this space.
They really are.
With, yeah. Well, you can find it at commandn.tv or just, search Podzinger. For Amber MacArthur, and you'll be amazed at what you'll find.
Oh, boy.
Including Humphrey the Goose. That's another matter entirely. All right, Amber, we'll see you next week.
Thanks, Leo.
Take care. I forgot last week to do it, and I better do it this week. We want to thank our good friends at AOL Radio for providing us with the bandwidth for this podcast and, of course, broadcasting it on their podcast channel. You want to know more? Go to AOL.com/podcasting. That's it for this edition of Inside the Net.